Stephanie, you write a great paper on toxicity, and one of the issues is how much difference there really is. Katie was just talking a little bit about that, but in terms of class effects, would you say, Stephanie, you see some kind of cytopenias with all PARP inhibitors, some kind of GI? It just kind of, it varies based on the drug and the individual. Is that your take?
Yeah, I think the hematological toxicity are common across all the PARP inhibitor treatment. I think there is some slight difference between the different PARP, but as we discussed earlier, definitely hematological toxicity seems to be a little bit more for niraparib, specifically for the platelets. So it's why the weekly CBC is important when we start niraparib, which is not the case for the other PARP, where every 2 weeks at the beginning should be sufficient because you don't have this thrombocytopenia as much as the as seen in the niraparib. But hematological toxicity remain across the different PARP. So it's why I think having regular CBC remain very important during all the treatment. At short term is really to look at the cytopenia. In long term is also to track eventually some MDS. MDS is rare, but can happen. So I think this blood check, I think, is very important. In terms of the GI toxicity, again, it's seen in different PARP inhibitor treatment. Olaparib and rucaparib are relatively similar in terms of GI. Niraparib seems to be a little bit less in terms of the GI, but have other potential other effects, as we just discussed, at the hypertension as well.
I was just thinking last year, I remember when we were at the meeting, you were like, oh, it's going to be great coming to Toronto next year. We never made it, did we?
We never
quite made it. Anyhow, Rob, I don't know if we're going to get to your case. You have a case of a patient who
great
got
case.
Caprib. But I want to just ask you to respond to this question we asked. I don't know if we'll get to your case, but if you can just talk a little bit, because we asked the faculty about the situation, the one situation you see with your caprib that, you know, is kind of unique, I think. Or maybe it's not completely unique, but at least
it's not certainly
been described. So we presented a patient who starts through caprib, and then her creatinine starts to go up. Mm-hmm. We asked people what they would do, and they're kind of split. Most people would keep the caprib going. You know, I'm sure people would do maybe some type of workup. But Rob, in general, how do you approach patients who have creatinines going up on caprib?
Yeah, generally I do like treat like any other emergent toxicity because you don't know if this is real or not. It's definitely found in this. We described it pretty well in the Aerial 2 and Aerial 3 studies, but I typically will hold it. It comes down very rapidly and then restart the same dose. If it goes back up again, I'll rehold it and then I'll check to make sure that I'm not just treating essentially a creatinemia and not a renal dysfunction, because that's really what you're trying to go after. In the case that we're not going to talk about, what happened with that one, she was actually an Aerial 2 patient, and we did exactly that. Of course, we were following the protocol, so we did the delay dose modification, but she went on to get almost 2 years of drug with a benefit, and then ultimately did develop acute kidney injury that led us to take her off of study. But we used a GFR scan to actually demonstrate that she actually had normal GFR, but had elevated creatinine due to the interaction with the transporters.
So you think it was the rucaparib causing renal damage?
Not damage, not at first.
Or dysfunction.
Dysfunction, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but normally what it does is it just interferes with the mate and transporters, and so you see this accumulation of creatinine, but you don't actually see kidney injury. And of course, that's what we check for, right? Is to estimate what their GFR is, and obviously it'll be increasing, and showing that their GFR is decreasing. And so we're worried about that. But what we showed in this patient was that her GFR was above 90 or above 89, I think, and it stayed that way. So we intermittently checked it, made sure. So it was just an elevated creatinine that didn't actually associate with kidney injury.
So, Joyce, last year, as I was walking around, stumbling around, lack of sleep from the long trip to Hawaii, I was reading Rob's paper on toxicity, and he brought up the impact of PARP on circadian rhythm. And I started to ask people, do you see insomnia? And people started to say yes. And incidentally, when I asked the other people, like the breast people, prostate, nobody, I don't know if they're not asking about insomnia or, you know, it doesn't occur, but I'm just kind of curious, Joyce, clinically, have you seen insomnia? Do you think these drugs cause insomnia?
Yeah, you can see insomnia in some patients. I think that, you know, Katie was bringing it up, certainly with niraparib, with the dopaminergic effects, but definitely you can see insomnia with some patients. I think, you know, it's hard to tease it out with all of the other psychosocial stressors that come along with the diagnosis of cancer, but I personally think that we see it.